Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Wake up to something different on Sunday mornings by joining me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz. The finest in modern jazz, from hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz every Sunday morning at 9 on Sheffield Live. 93.2 FM.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident. To boldly go where no
man has gone before. It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
Yes, get ready for Soul Plus every Saturday at 10 a.m. Soul Plus, the music that led to soul, came out of soul. Soul Plus, every Saturday, 10 a.m. Get ready. Soul Plus, every Saturday, 10 a.m.
This is Sheffield Live.
Hello and welcome to the film show. We're back this week after last week's unexpected interruption.
Yes,
unexpected. I was caught unawares. First off, apologies for last week's break in transmission, but I was rather unwell and we had to cancel at very much the last moment. So,
but you're all fighting fit now, aren't you?
Sort of.
Fighting something.
As I used to say at the beginning of Stingray, anything could happen in the next half hour.
We've got a schedule of sorts, haven't we?
It's sort of like last week's, but cannibalised. Yeah. And you'll be pleased to know... It's Shatmas this week. Yes, William Shatner's Christmas album is what we'll be drawing our musical inspiration from.
In truth, you've only dragged yourself out of the sick bed, haven't you, to get this on the air.
I owe it. I owe it to our listeners.
Get ready, everyone.
Right, well, let's go through two of our main stories, which turn up almost every week. What's this week's Nick Cave story?
Oh, is there a Nick Cave story?
It would seem so.
So, The Death of Bunny Monroe. Have you read the book?
I have.
It's a bleak one, isn't it?
It is. I do have a hardback first edition of it.
So do I.
Oh, do you? Signed by Nick.
Okay, no, he signed one of my other ones and gave me a hug, but that's a different story.
Yeah. I've got And the Ass signed, And the Ass Saw the Angel signed by him.
Oh, I love that book.
First edition.
Yeah. Bunny Monroe, though, is... The story is bleak, isn't it? It's a boy loses his mother and ends up spending time with his father, who is a drug taking Lothario.
It's travelling salesman sort of thing, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
And he's in the film that's coming up. He is played by Matt Smith.
It was going to be Ray Winston. Because Nick and Ray are good mates.
They're good mates. After as the we proposition, saw in, 20,000 Days
of Yeah, yeah.
So, what do you think?
Well, actually, it's not going to be a film, is it? It's going to be a Netflix series.
Oh, yeah, of course, it's six episodes.
So it's going to be interesting. I just hope Nick hasn't done any songs for it.
Oh, shut your cake off. I'm looking forward to it.
I am. Yeah.
I wonder if they're going to what they're going to change, because he's so. I mean, he's so despicable, isn't he?
Yeah.
Like, and it's so. Some of the. See, I won't go into the details on an afternoon show, but it's quite unpleasant.
Well, let's hope they stick to the spirit of the book. I think. Yeah.
Well, I think he's got like an exec producing type thing on it.
Oh, I'm sure he has.
Mr. Cave.
And a love theme, and
I'll sing the intro song.
Oh, yeah, Warren Ellis comes in and soars away on his violin from that's the soundtrack album.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that. When's it out?
I don't know.
It's sometime in the new year, I think, or the summer.
I'm sure we'll end up discussing it again. Unfortunately,
is it a Netflix or a Sky?
I think.
It's HBO.
It might be Sky actually.
Have a look. It's Sky Atlantic. I think that might be good then.
Yeah. All right. Next on to our other weekly item. This week's Wizard of Oz item.
Now, you put this on, not me.
Well, it just seemed quite an interesting one. Yeah. It was the shoes that Judy Garland wore. Well, one pair of shoes. I think there were four of them used in the film that she wore in The Wizard of Oz, and she was Dorothy. Went up for auction 2 weeks ago, and now these shoes are actually stolen by a criminal back in 2005 from the Judy Garland Museum, where he just went in, smashed the display case they were in and walked out with them, because he thought there was real rubies and diamonds on the shoes.
Right.
And he thought it was going to be worth a fortune. They weren't. It was glass. But they were put up for auction at the beginning of the end of November, and they were expecting a selling price of $3 million. They were sold $28 million.
What? That's
that's
that guy was right.
I mean, that guy, he was right.
He just had to live for it,
yeah. Patience is a virtue. So,
that's a massive amount of money for a
it's quite bit ridiculous.
Of costume.
Yeah, yeah. What
for
else
a film
we got?
You've never even watched.
Yes. It's in the ether with me. Yeah. I've got past the point now of having to watch it.
I finally got the earworm out of my head from the musical, and it's back now. You've started talking about that. Just so you know.
Obviously, I haven't had to succumb to that particular torture. Just very quickly, Yellowstone was finally put out of its misery this week. Another one of these shows that went on for too long, and because of events outside of the actual programme, they had to cobble together an ending, which meant even more of Kelly Riley pouting and flouncing around, twirling her hair back and being horrible to everyone. I was so glad that it was over.
Did you like the beginning of it?
I liked the beginning of it. And it was a strange thing, because it was never winning any Emmys, but it sort of built up this steady, quite genuine fan following. I think now, we talked about Taylor Sheridan, the writer and the showrunner, a few weeks back. He's doing too much, and at least he could hopefully just give Yellowstone a rest.
Putting himself too thin.
I don't want any spin-off shows from it, and I never, ever want to watch anything with Kelly Riley in again.
Oh, bless her. She's okay. Okay.
Right. Leaving it there.
What else we got?
Trailer Trash.
No, we've got something before that.
Oh, we have, haven't we?
Because while we're off, the Independent Film Awards happened, and there was some interesting British... So the British Independent Film Awards took place a couple of weeks ago, Kneecap, big winner for the best British independent film, which is a bit of a controversial one. It's also got an Oscar. It's the talk of an Oscar nomination for it as well.
I watched it a few weeks back. Now I could get subtitles to come up. What did you say?
It's a great film. Did you enjoy it?
I did, yeah. I did. It had a real energy to it.
I went to see it twice.
Yeah.
The second time with my friend from Northern Ireland, and I was like, oh, I'm so glad to... I was hoping that she was going to like it and not give it the, you know...
Well, you're hoping she was going to translate for you.
And she loved it as well, so I was really, honestly.
Yeah, excellent.
Best Director went to a film that I watched the other week and reviewed on the show when you were off and I was on my own. Rangano Nioni, the director of On Becoming Guinea Fowl. So that's really nice. What else did we have? Oh, Marianne Jean Baptiste. So we haven't seen it yet, but Hard Truths, the new Mike Lee film.
Did I tell you when I worked with Mike Lee on?
Yes, when you were one of the leads in one of his films, Mr. Turner.
Mr. Turner.
I don't know, I just knew that story somehow. You must have mentioned it in passing.
I always remember what Mike said to me. He said, get out of my way.
Who's this?
Who are you? Anyway... R.I.P. Marisa Paredes. I checked online how to pronounce that in case I said Maria Paredes or Marisa Paredes. Passed away this week at the age of 78. She was a muse for Pedro Almodovar in six of his movies. Such as High Heels, The Flower of My Secret, All About My Mother. I haven't got the list up here for the rest of them, but I'll get it in a moment. But yes, she also worked with Guillermo del Toro on Devil's Backbone. A real giant of Spanish cinema. Enormously popular with art house and commercial audiences. She was a big star in television programs during the 60s and 70s, and then in the 80s took up with Almodovar and became a huge international star from being in so many of his movies, which were by that time reaching large global audiences.
Was she in Women on the Verge as well? Maybe not, actually.
I'm not sure. I don't think that was.
That was the one that brought really a mode of our international recognition, wasn't it?
So she's been Dark Habits, High Heels, Flower of My Secret, All About My Mother. But I think there are some others as well. I haven't got the full list up.
I just thought, because there's so many big women's parts in that film.
Well, if you look through all of his films, isn't there? He's been able to create... If you look at the number of well-known Spanish actresses that there are in international cinema... she was also in maybe not quite a great Roberto Benigni's Life is Beautiful, which, although it won loads of awards,
it was very popular at the time, and then everyone went,
I'm not sure.
Not really sure about this.
Yeah.
yes. That was the one with the trying to make the Death Camp Entertainment Park. Yeah. No.
Jerry Lewis did a similar thing with the Clown That Cried, which has never been shown. He's sort of banned it from being shown anywhere. What have I done?
You just thought better in
home. What have I done? So, sad farewell then to Marisa Paredes. Trailer trash.
Oh. So this is now, we've still got to mention it, even though it was going to be on last week's show, but 28 years later, I'm thinking this looks like a return to form for the first film, if the trailer is to be trusted.
Second film was a bit of a damp squib.
Well, it was just a different film. Like, I quite liked it, And I quite like the bleakness of it. It was incredibly bleak.
But it was a bit silly, wasn't it, Ariel? Yeah. You know, oh, let's just walk into this lab and do something. You know, okay.
But I mean, I'm so fond of 28 Days Later.
Yes.
And I was never into that kind of film so much. But I like the unusual filmmaking of it and the just Killian. That's when I first saw Killian Murphy.
I hadn't realised that Danny Boyle was directing this as well. I thought they were bringing in another director like what I did with 28 Weeks Later.
And it's Alex Garland as well. And he's just done, I mean, Civil War was so good. And he directed Civil War as well.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping from the look of the trailer, you've got Ralph Fiennes in there as well. He looks particularly sinister.
Unfortunately, though, there is all Aaron Taylor Wood.
Oh, maybe he'll get eaten quite early on, I don't know.
We can only hope,
but
isn't it?
The trailer looks moody. It looks like there's a bit, it's on an island.
Yes, it looks nasty, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it looks like, post-apocalyptic, how we'll be living in these weird little societies. And
people are saying that you can see Killian Murphy in as a zombie.
Yeah.
But the jury's still out on that one, I think.
I mean,
it's and the other trailer that was released this week was for the new version of Superman, which is due to be released sometime next year.
I will admit, I've not seen this trailer.
With David Corn Sweat as Superman. I must admit, he's unfamiliar
he's
to me.
By.
I mean, I may well have needed to have tested out the pronunciation of that one before I did. But Nicholas Holt is Lex Luthor. So that's something to look forward to.
See, as you get older with Superman, I do find that the people that they cast as Lex Luthor are the ones that you find more appealing.
Yes, yeah. Well, that's interesting, isn't it?
I like the guy that admits that the world is terrible and I might as well just, be completely mean.
Yeah. This one is directed by James Gunn, who made the Guardians of the Galaxy trilogy. Yeah, you get what you pay for.
I don't know. Maybe in Superman I was more forgiving in the 70s and 80s of the idea that he could hide his identity with a pair of glasses and a bad suit.
Yeah, it don't.
And some fumbling, but...
Not with facial recognition there and all that. He doesn't stand a chance. Right, music time.
Oh, is it time?
Are you ready?
I'm ready, everyone.
Are ready? William Shatner's Shatner Claws album from about 6 years.
Shatner Claws.
We've got a selection.
Is that really? No, sorry, hang on. Is that really what it's called?
Shatner Claws.
Oh, God. Yeah. Okay.
We've created the name Shatmus for the period we're currently going to go for. So we've got four numbers from this, and to me, they create a complete atmosphere for Christmas. And if you need to download this and you'd be singing some of these, because they're all well-known songs. And we're going to start off with a Christmas classic from Bill, and this is his take at Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
You know Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donder and Blitzen. But do you recall the most famous reindeer of all? Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Oh, he had a very shiny nose. And if you ever saw it, you would even say, it glows. All of the other reindeer, they used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph play in any reindeer games.
Then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say,
Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight?
Then all the reindeer they shouted out with glee,
"Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer, you'll go down in history." Yeah! Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer, had a very shiny nose.
That was William Shatner.
And there was a suitable shocked pause after that.
Yes. It fades out 30 minutes before the track, 30 seconds before, and I forgot about that.
There's probably a secret bit at the end.
Yeah.
We've missed him saying, "Happy Christmas."
Oh, he'll say it.
Oh, they don't say Happy Christmas in America.
He'll say Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad.
He's going to be doing that way later on. Control your excitement.
Oh, I'm controlling it, mate. Don't you worry. I just remind you, you are listening to the film show.
William Shatner Appreciation Society show. Oh, come on, I've been ill.
Yeah, you have been ill. Even you didn't want people to hear you say William Shatner, so you faded down the mic.
You're obsessed with him. Right, so we're going to have obsessions, a little canter around some of our favourite films of 2024, and I have to admit I've been getting a bit bored with stuff recently. I just think we seem to have been in this. We talk about the same films all the time, and and there's been a lot of films that I haven't liked in the second half of the year as well.
Yeah, but it started off quite strong.
Exactly. Yeah. So I sort of went back to some of the films that I saw earlier. In fact, when we first went on air. And I remember we seemed to have a period of about 2 or 3 months where we were loving. There was at least one film every week. We thought that was brilliant. And I think I've had cinema has had a bit of a dip, let's say. So I was going to go back to a film which had quite a big effect on me, which was Monster, Corriedo's film about the friendship between two young teenagers in Japan, which was told from three different perspectives, and each time you got a different part of the story, it added to it, or it stopped you thinking some of your assumptions
changed
about
the
story
about
was,
the other one.
And it was all about perception. And by the end of it, you had a more fuller picture of what had happened. And I haven't been able to go back and watch it yet still because it upset me so much.
I remember you being, yeah, really.
And I just could, I mean, I couldn't get this film out of my head for weeks. And this morning I watched the trailer. I thought, I might watch this over Christmas. And I just watched the trailer. And I thought, no, I can't, I just can't go back to this yet. The whole thing moved me so much. It was so emotional. I'm tearing
Isn't
up now.
Because I really liked the film, but I just don't remember having as much of an emotional connection as you. But I did with another one. Shoplifters was the one that got
me. Well, Shoplifters is another one, and he
just tweaks it, doesn't he? Yeah. It just turns
and it's like it's so subtle, and there's no. I think the thing that I really loved about it, because it's something you don't see a lot, it was about friendship between two boys, that male friendship. Mm. And you don't get many films that do that in a way that is just about two boys or two men being friends.
Did you see Close?
But that's another one that does it brilliantly. So I still might have to wait a bit longer before I go back and actually watch it again.
Mm.
But it's been one of, it's still with me now. I can still taste it now almost. It was such a moving experience.
Well, back in May, so this film came out in 2023, so La Chimera, Alice Rohrwacher's film. It came out here in May of this year. And I was blown away by this film. And it's one of those films where I didn't know much about it. I didn't know much about her filmmaking before, although I had seen one or two of them. But nothing had connected in this way. And for the first, 10, 20 minutes, you're like, where's this going?
It's really, it was strange, really. Yeah.
But it just got... It's just out of jail, English... archaeologist on his down, Josh O'Connor. He's living in Italy, 1980s Italy, and he tries to avoid a band of people that he grave robbers, really, basically.
And they loot these graves for artifacts and.
But it's not. It's not like this weird. It just becomes this weird adventure. But
you don't know where it's going to go next, do you?
I can't even speak about it, yeah.
And I remember thinking, I've got no idea what this is really about, even, but she brings it all together, and it was... I think I said when we watched it, I was confused by it, and I wasn't know exactly... And then there was that bit where they played Kraftwerk's Space Lab, and it was like everything just... Oh, yeah. I sort of get it now, I think. I'm going to go with it, yeah.
It captures this weird rural life as well in Italy that it felt so authentic. And then when you look back into her history, it is sort of from her background. Oh, it's just such a good film, and that's streaming on Mubi now. But I want to... My other half's away this weekend visiting family up north. So I've got the run of the TV, although I can't actually get to the TV now. Can't get to my stash of DVDs and Blu-rays because the tree's so big in the corner of the room. But yeah, I want to give that another watch over Christmas, New Year, I think.
Me?
Mm-hmm.
There was another film which had a big effect on me. And it was one that I just wasn't expecting I wasn't expecting it to be the film that it turned out to be. And that was I Saw the TV Glow, which was it's an A24 film, and it was sort of promoted as if it was going to be a bit of a horror film, supernatural, and it wasn't anything of the sort. It's the story of a teenage boy and a teenage girl who they're both quite lonely and somehow come together because they have a shared interest in this television program. And this is set in the 1980s. He hasn't been able to see it because it's on too late for him to stay up and watch it. And the young woman has recorded all the shows on video. So there's a lovely sort of nostalgia thing. This thing about, well, I can remember when you used to tape stuff off the telly. And, oh, you had a copy of it. It weren't always brilliant, but you had a copy. And it becomes about their friendship and how that friendship sort of dissipates and how both of them are so confused with life as young people. They drift apart and then they come back again together 10 years or so later. And it's like they've got all doubts about this TV programme, The Pink Opaque, as it was called. It was a bit like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but a bit cheaper and tackier. And and they start to doubt, it feeds into the doubts they've got about themselves, about their lives, about their sexuality. And it really is a film about how children and young people can be just overpowered, overwhelmed by dealing with life. And the end was absolutely shattering. I walked out of the cinema, I was just thinking, oh my God. I needed a big drink when I got in after that. But I think it's not everyone's cup of tea. You know, when you've got a film, I don't know if I want to recommend this to anyone.
Yeah.
Because too many people aren't going to like it, you know.
Sometimes you want people to find and genuinely connect with and not push
it
down.
And I think I said when I went to see it, when I first reviewed it, there seemed to be a lot of people leaving the cinema very, very disappointed with it.
But maybe they're didn't read the little paragraph that says what to expect.
But, well, as I say, I think the way it was promoted, it was a bit of she's going to be a bit of a horror film there was some horrific stuff in there, but not in the, so that was, for me, one of my films of the year, and Jane Schoenbrunn, who directed it, I think really is a talent to look out for, to see what they will do next.
Well, I really, really loved The Beast. So The Beast was, again, it's one of those 2023 films because it was released overseas first. Bertrand Bonello's film came out here this year. The plot, as much as it is, so it is set in 2044 and AI has taken over work in most of the world. And humans are just sort of pretty redundant and useless. And they go through this... They can opt to go through this purification process, which rids them of, by visiting past lives, rids them of strong emotions so they can be more acceptable. Because, you know, AI would figure out that strong emotions can make you weaker or sad. And
strangely, you know, and I was thinking about when we were talking about it, you know, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind has a similar device in it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, although done in a very, very different way.
I think this isn't, and this doesn't start off massively explicit about what's going on.
Yeah.
And you get to visit Léa Seydoux's character's previous lives. It looks gorgeous. The period costumes and settings are amazing. George Mackay, did you say Mackay or Mackay? Mackay?
If he ain't here, you can say whatever you want.
Yeah, he's not listening. George Mackay is wonderful in it. He's done a couple of films now where he's like an English-speaking character in a European film as well.
Yeah.
He's really amazing in it, and he plays a range of people characters who interact with her in her previous lives. But it's not... It's a bit like... Did you see Time Stalker in the end, the Alice Lowe film?
No, I didn't, no.
It's a little bit of a similar thing of the idea of stalking someone through time. Overall, like the response that I had to it was, I just need to see that again. Yeah. I just loved it.
I remember us both saying that we felt as it went on, it became more and more David Lynch like, didn't it? And
yeah,
it
really especially had the final
bit. In, yeah,
like, the Hollywood.
That was very, very twin. If the end of the third season of Twin Peaks, it really did remind you of that, and that growing sense of dread as the film went on, which you get from most David Lynch films. But that's not to say it was a copy of a Lynch film, but it was something entirely of itself.
Yeah, the closing scene, and I won't reveal the closing scene because I really want to see it. It's also streaming on Mubi. But it has use of the Roy Orbison song Evergreen, which I played the other week. And yeah, as you realise, it's really stunning. Yeah.
And it's strange enough that, like Monster, it was like three stories which fed into each other, wasn't it? Yeah.
And we share it now. We're going to share one, aren't we? Now a final mention for film of the year.
Yeah, again, one from very early on in the year,
and it also featured in the Oscars because it was out earlier.
Yeah.
Elsewhere, but
Jonathan Glazer's The Zone of Interest.
Yeah, can't not mention it, really, can we?
Yeah, a truly extraordinary film, I think. I was watching something on YouTube a few weeks ago, which was all about the sound design on it, and the detail that they went into in creating a soundscape for the film. There was as much work went into that as what went into the visuals for it, and you realise how much that created this awful, horrible, dreadful environment. It was, the film is about the family of the commandant of Auschwitz, Rudolf Hoss, and the almost like terrifyingly
idyllic lifestyle,
domesticity of them living next to the gas chambers. I remember coming out and feeling stunned by it.
Yeah, it was such a poetic film as well, wasn't it? And just, and there would suddenly be, we're doing the negative of the young girl. And you were like, is this a fantasy? Is this what's going on?
Don't know what it is at the time. It really sort of like throws you off for a few minutes. You think, it must be that. And it's just something. The atmosphere it creates is just incredible.
Well, Mika Levi did the soundtrack as well for that.
Yeah.
But I haven't, because it's not like a soundtrack in the same way that I haven't actually listened to the whole of her soundtrack yet.
I mean, I've got the scores that she did for Jackie and for
Under the Skin.
Under the Skin, you know. And
that's one of my favourite.
They aren't ones you're going to whistle to, are they? Whistle along to. But they are extraordinary moods. The moods they create are just, there is nothing else like them. I'd certainly put down, that's a film that's going to be there for the ages, so I think.
They're films that stunned us. And I didn't even mention The Fall Guy. Oh, my gosh.
No, thank God. Well, I guess we're moving rather briskly along. It's William Shatner time, everyone. we've got, this is a little more sedate one, and I think once you've heard this, you'll be wanting to sing along to this in the way that Bill sings along to it. Pa-ra-pa-pa-pum.
Come, they told me, pa-ra-pa-pa-pum. A newborn king to see, pa-pa-pa-pa-pum. Our finest gifts we bring, pa-pa-pa-pum-pum. To lay before the king, pa-pa-pa-pum, rum-pa-pa-pum, rum-pa-pa-pum. So, to honor him, pa-pa-pa-pum. Little baby, ba-rubba-bum-bum. I'm Poor Boy Toot. Ba-ra-ba-ba-ba. I have no gift to bring. Ba-rum-ba-bum-bum. That's fit to give a king. Ba-rum-ba-bum-bum. Rum-ba-bum-bum. Rum-ba-ba-bum. Shall I play for you? Ba-rum-ba-bum-bum. On my drum? Mary nodded. Ba-bum-ba-bum-bum. The ox and lamb kept time. Ba-rum-ba-bum-bum. I played my drum for him. Ba-rum-ba-bum-bum. Rum-ba-bum-bum. I played my best for him. When we come, then he smiled at me. Ba-rum-ba-bum-bum. Me and my drum. Ba-rum-ba-bum-bum. 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 Me and my drum. Pa-rum-pa-pum-pum, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum.
Our finest gifts we bring,
me and my drum.
Me and my drum.
Rum-pa-pum-pum. Rum-pa-pum-pum.
You are listening to the film show on Sheffield Live.
Are they still listening, Martin?
I think our viewing, our listening figures have probably just gone through the roof there. You need to calm yourself down. There's tears streaming down your cheeks there.
Tears of Christmas joy.
That was Christmas in a nutshell. William Shatner and the Little Drummer Boy from his Christmas album, Shatner Claus. Right, keeping with the Christmas theme, we're just going to knock around a few ideas of Christmassy films you might want to watch with, hopefully, you're not going for the dead obvious ones.
Well, I like the dead obvious ones. I like some of them. I like A Muppet's Christmas Carol. I like It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, yeah, lovely. Yeah.
But obviously I've watched them a lot.
Yes, and they'll be on probably everywhere. Yeah. But so there's a few, let's say a few left field ones, and a few ones which well we like. And
well, mine's not that left field. His is more left field than mine, I'll be honest. Because I'm starting with what I watched last night, which was The Apartment.
Yes.
When I was younger, I wasn't that mad about it. And we've gone the opposite way, because I really, really like it now, and you're less inclined now.
I mean, I still like it as a film. I just really, really dislike Jack Lemmon's character in it. And
and you'd think that'd be my job, but yeah.
Yeah.
Billy Wilder, 1960, Shirley MacLaine, Jack Lemmon.
Fred McMurray.
Fred McMurray, yeah.
Mr. Sheldrake.
Mr. Sheldrake.
Taking
her off your hands now, Mr.
It's Sheldrake. Taking her off your hands, Mr. Sheldrake.
Shut up and deal.
Yeah. And he does that lead up to Christmas in an office environment,
yeah,
really well.
And that dead, horrible time between Christmas and New Year.
I love that time. I like it. That's my favourite time at Christmas.
But it can be really lonely,
yeah,
for people.
Yeah. On their own.
Lonely. And Jack Lemmon's why don't you be a mensch?
Yeah.
He
deserves to be alone in that film. Yeah. Okay. I've gone a bit off-piste with some of my choices, with some stuff also that I just found by chance, and I picked up on a strange Cheap as Chips film noir from 1959 called Blast of Silence. And let me just call it up here and I can get some details for you. I forgot. Blast of Silence was directed by Alan Barron in 1959, only $20,000 it cost. And it's about a hitman coming into New York to carry out a contract over Christmas and the New Year. And again, it's got that nice period between Christmas and a man in New York, all on his own. Not much is open. He's like wandering the empty streets of Manhattan. And it is bleak. This is... there's something so cold and world-weary about the movie. And a lot of it was shot silent, and they overdubbed it in post-production. So there's not a lot of dialogue. But what there is a voiceover. But the voiceover is given by probably the only familiar name, actor-wise, which was Lionel Stander. And Lionel Stander was, he was blacklisted in the 1950s, and he couldn't get any work in the States anymore. Yep. And he ended up going to Britain, where he was in films such as Cul-de-Sac, and then he went to Italy and throughout Europe, working on spaghetti westerns, crime films, anything he could get a gig going. And it's unmistakably his voice doing this almost stream of consciousness narration to the film. As I say, it's very, very bleak, but I can't think of any other film like it. And it's probably one of the most un-Christmassy films you might ever want to see. And the decorations and the lights in the background around the Rockefeller Center and all that, they just conjure up this terrible vision of loneliness and being on your own at a time, well, when you shouldn't be.
This is the third one in the row now, but I've got another New York one.
Go on.
And it's not even a Christmas film, Home Alone. If I'm honest. It's Moonstruck. Christmas is sort of going on in the background. It's not really part of the film at all. But I see it as a Christmas film. Maybe I watched it at Christmas, I don't know. But Cher is Loretta, who's going to marry Danny Aiello's character.
Don't marry him, no.
Disappears overseas, and it's her job to try and convince his brother to come. And obviously his brother is Nicolas Cage. They fall in love. Ma, I love him awful, then I'm sorry for you. Snap out of it.
What are you going to do? I'll go to your funeral in a red dress.
It's just a brilliant performance by Cher. It's just a brilliant... I've never been to New York, but I feel like I know New York. As long as New York's like me,
it captures,
I'm all right.
It captures New York beautifully.
And that scene when they go to the Met.
Yeah. And she looks very Christmassy. And she's got a very Christmassy dress on, and red and sparkly.
And her hair. It's Christmassy to me.
Yeah.
I'm loving it.
No, that's a great one. Okay, I'm gone for another obscure one, which I discovered several weeks ago, which is a Mexican film noir called The Other One, starring the absolutely amazing Dolores Del Rio.
That is a brilliant name.
Isn't it?
Dolores Del Rio.
What do you got? Who was quite a big star in Hollywood during the 30s and early 40s, but the roles dried up for her as she started to hit 40, as so often happens
How
with
dare
great
she
actresses.
Get to 40? Oh gosh, I've just looked at a picture of her. She looks amazing.
And she went back to Mexico, where she started getting fantastic parts in what were enormously popular films in Mexico and South America, in Spanish-speaking parts of South America. And I love films where there's an actress playing twin sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Good sister, bad sister.
Does she wear a black cap for the bad and a white?
Well,
hat for the good,
I don't want to give too much away, but there's a bit of sort of mingling of good and bad here. But the first act of the film is set at Christmas, and the third act of the film is set at Christmas a year later, with the middle act where all the secrets and all that come out. She just looks absolutely amazing through it, whether she's the, the quite mousy good sister or the super glam bad sister. And it's a film that... I think you might be able to find it on YouTube, and you can find Blast of Silence on YouTube as well, if you fancy seeing it.
I do.
Yeah.
I do, and I will.
You'll like it. Yeah. Go on, see.
I will.
See if I don't. Yeah,
since
watch
that,
me.
Since that Martin said the yeah. show.
Well, he told me, and I thought, well, I don't know what he's talking about, does he?
One of my favourite Christmassy films is Brazil, and it's very bleak. Terry Gilliam. Yes. 1984.
Yeah.
Jonathan Pryce. It just takes place around Christmas time. There is no, he doesn't get a great Christmas, bless him. Spoilers and all that. But that's one of my favourite films.
No, and I don't think, it's nice to find, and it can be a surprise sometimes where, you know, like Christmas can turn up in a film.
Yeah.
That, oh, it's set at Christmas, this, you know.
Well, I've got three new ones to add to the, four in fact, new ones to add to the canon this year. That have come out this year that Christmas appears in or features in. So you've got The Holdovers, obviously, which came out January here and is now streaming. The Outrun, she ends up on an island on her own at Christmas, and just there's this brilliant scene where she's dancing around the kitchens with some reggae. Small Things Like These is my new... I will watch it every Christmas now. That's the Cillian Murphy in the lead-up to Christmas Eve. Stunning film. I still want to see it again and again. Yeah. And even Oliver Strangers.
And finally, there is a vintage film that we've both agreed on that is now going on to our list of favourite Crimbo films.
Yeah.
Remember the Night. Oh. Preston Sturges script, directed
Sturges.
By Mitchell Leisen, starring Barbara Stanwyck and Fred Murray. Fred McMurray.
Fred McMurray.
And they don't kill anyone in this one.
No.
And it's...
Is he a district attorney?
A district attorney who's prosecuted Barbara Stanwyck for shoplifting.
And that opening scene where she's doing the shoplifting and she's walking away, the panning shot is really...
That's great, isn't it? Now, it's all very contrived, this, but it ends up that she isn't sent to prison over the Christmas holiday, but he has to sort of... She's put in his custody,
and
he takes her back to his family out in the boondocks somewhere, and you know her family life has been unhappy, and she finds out what it's like to be in the bosom of a warm, loving family, yada yada yada.
Go to jail.
But then the ending is strange, you know. The ending isn't quite what you might want it to be. But I think a lot of that is to do with what the production code would have said you can and can't do. And if you've committed a crime,
gotta do your time.
You can't get away with it.
I'm going to just make one mention of The Bishop's Wife again, because Cary Grant as an angel is my fantasy.
I mean, you wanted him dead.
Too late for that.
Yes.
But David Niven as well, and Loretta Young. Oh, he plays like an angel, a guardian angel that's come down to supposedly help out the marriage of David Niven's Henry and Loretta Young's Julia. But, of course, he falls in love with the bishop's wife.
I don't like
what
David.
What are you going to do?
I don't like David Niven.
Well, you don't mind if he's cuckolded and super
I don't, actually. That's all he deserves. Right, I know you're all gagging for the next...
We are. So bring on the Shatner.
We were talking about Mexican cinema, so here's a Mexican Christmas song.
Hey, wanna wish you a Merry Christmas. a Merry Christmas. No, really. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas from the bottom of my heart. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. No, really. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. Hey, I want to wish you a Merry Christmas from the bottom of my heart.
I want to wish you a Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
I want to wish you a Merry Christmas.
From the bottom of my heart.
We believe you, Bill. We believe you. Right then, very quickly, galloping towards the end of the show. What you got?
What have I got?
Yeah.
What do I want for Christmas?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a new Blu-ray box set, Hitchcock, early British films. Wouldn't mind that.
10 films?
It's very, very expensive, though. So
well, I'm not buying it for
Christmas
you.
If Christmas doesn't bring it, I'll just wait until it's on sale.
And I've written to Santa, I want the complete 3 seasons of Lars von Trier's The Kingdom. And the 3rd season, which is great, set at Christmas.
You've got a lot to get through before you get to watch that.
I can manage it. I can manage it.
What are we going to be missing? Well, we're going to be seeing at the cinema before we come back, because we're going to take a few weeks off, aren't we? We're back on the Saturday, the 11th of January.
Yes, yeah.
A Better Man is out on Boxing Day. I'm very excited about that. Robbie Williams, Monkey, in case you've forgotten.
Yep.
We've only mentioned it every week since September.
Robert Eggers' Nosferatu, his take on that.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, Willem Dafoe's in it. Would you believe it?
I don't. What are you going to do? I'm quite looking forward to this Thailand film, How to Make Millions Before Grandma Dies. It looks like a sad, sad film I'll be crying over Christmas pudding over.
Yeah. Well, that's it. So that's it from us for 2024. I hope you've enjoyed our musings, our arguments, our...
We haven't argued today, have we?
No, it's Christmas, isn't it? It's Christmas.
Merry Christmas!
Could be a lot of films for you to watch over the next few weeks, so enjoy your films, but stay away from Red One. Because it's rubbish.
We didn't even review it, did we?
No, couldn't be bothered. I wasn't going to give it the dignity of a review.
Oh.
More Bill? you want
to. One more Bill.
Merry Christmas, everyone, and we'll be back in January
with
more Nick Cave and Wizard of Oz stories. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Bye-bye.
Dashing through the snow on the one-horse open sleigh, o'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to laugh and sing a sleighing song tonight.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride a one-horse open sleigh.
Ago, I thought I'd take a ride, and soon Miss Fanny Bright was seated by my side. The horse was lean and lank, misfortune seemed his lot. We got into a drifted bank, and then we got upset.